Welcome to the Cancel Proof Podcast. My name is Jason Rink.
Hello, I'm Paul Escandone. It's good to be back with you. Thank you.
And yes, we're a couple of filmmakers out in the world making unapproved films and getting canceled in the process.
Every week it's a new cancellation, it seems like.
It is. And the topic this week, it's you know, I was talking to somebody about this just the other day, and I was saying, you know, we can actually get to the place where we forget that the cancellation is fairly new phenomenon. Like, you know, Milo was canceled early on, 2016, I think. And Alex Jones, you know, there was some big cancellations that happened out the gate. But this sort of weekly cancellation of just regular people and big people, small people, whatever, across different platforms, multiple platforms, all of that, it's relatively new. And it really ramped up over, you know, the run-up to the 2020 election and then during COVID, and then in the aftermath of January 6th. And so now it's sort of like you can get a little like, ho-hum, yawn, oh, another cancellation. Oh, somebody kicked off of a platform, whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when you look at, you know, Nick Fuentes, for example, who we had on the podcast last time, I mean, it's escalated with people that are now like the more louder, larger platform, more followers, guys. It's not just you can't use services anymore. It's like you can't really like live a fully functional life anymore. You can't have a bank account anymore. You can't get on an airplane, you know. You might not be able to get on a train. You can't fly anywhere. And so, and that to me was the big story, which is why I wanted to cover it and I wanted to make a documentary about it. But the whole like, oh, Twitch bans you, YouTube bans you, Twitter bans you, it's ho-hum. It's like not even an issue anymore. It's assumed that if you're anywhere right of Mitch McConnell, you have there might be a world where you're like deplatformed completely or banned soon. And so, sometimes people forget, I think, that what had never happened just 5 or 6 years ago. Now it's just a completely different world. And you talked about after January 6th, there are these waves, these purge waves. And the biggest purge wave, of course, was after January 6th. And it was a pretext to just knock a lot of people out. And they did arguably in a very successful way. And some people are now just starting to build back from that. And we are trying to build back from that too, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that we did an interview with Ali Alexander and Michael Kudrey on the day that they got banned off of Twitter.
Yeah, that's right.
January 7th. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, we were in DC still after January 6th, and there was just a massive wave of deplatformers. It was like they took Trump out, and then it was like the big Stop the Steal people they started to take out. And you know what? It was that guy from the Department of Justice, or I forget who it was.
Michael Sherwin.
Yeah. He said like, hey, this is going to be shock and awe. You know, we're going to try to get as many people, you know, arrested. And I think also it was deplatformed kind of right out the gate. And
yeah,
so,
yeah, there was a legal side of it. The Department of Justice, FBI, DOJ, DOJ, which is the Department of Justice. I just said that twice. And then there was all the, you know, big tech and woke corporate, all the other aligned services, which were just so happy to fall in line and be like, ban, 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 ban. And that was all happening around that time. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I would like to say this when we talk about, and we're going to talk about some stories that have broke this week. And it's really across the board, these different cancellations. But, you know, I want to bring some attention to the fact that the social media cancellations and the cancellations that have to do with these different platforms, it's more than just trying to silence people and get them to not be able to put their voice out there. It's also designed to try to prevent them from being able to earn a living, from supporting themselves. It's also designed to stop people from being able to organize and communicate with one another. And I think that's what we see in a series of these cancellations, right? So after January 6th and Stop the Steal and all that, there was definitely where they didn't want anybody to be able to organize. They didn't want any more rallies to happen. They didn't want anything to happen for the inauguration. Like, they just were trying to shut all that down. And they effectively did that to a certain degree. And then there's the deplatforming that happened to people like Nick, and that we're going to see Patreon. did some deplatforming where it has an immediate and dramatic impact on the finances of creators and people who are just trying to go out there and make media and make content. And then finally, I think the ultimate cancellation is almost like getting arrested, you know, and throwing you in prison and not allowing you to get out, you know, with no bail, all of that. You know, that's also a cancellation. So it's a series of depersoning you, preventing you from being able to get your voice out into the world, preventing you from being able to organize, preventing you from being able to talk to people, whatever. And I have one quick thing I want to share. After I got banned off of Facebook, a friend of mine reached out to me about a week and a half later. And he says to me, he just texted me. He's like, hey, man. He's like, I kind of forgot about you. He said, it's really sort of weird. You've only been off Facebook for like a week and a half, but you're not in my feed anymore, so I don't think about you that much. And it was really sort of interesting because I was like, wow. Like, social media is what's ever present for most people, right? Yeah. It's like you see those posts, you see those updates, all of that. I think that it is, we underestimate how social media has become this sort of replacement for a lot of the other types of social interactions that, you know, we used to have prior
to
social media.
It's just, when you think about it, it's how we connect with the world and with those around us and with our friends these days. A lot of people that we call our friends, most of the engagement is digitally or online or on some sort of like internet platform. So yeah, if that wasn't a guy that you were seeing weekly or going out to dinner, or going out to get coffee with, having a business meeting, doing a project with, you were only kind of, he was seeing your posts, Facebook. You were seeing his posts. You guys were chatting with each other. When Meta, Facebook Inc. or Meta yanks that from you, you no longer have that touch point, that way of engagement. And so for all intents and purposes, you are gone from a guy's life like that. And I think, you know, that should tell us something about what happens when we rely on a corporation, a corporate platform to create and maintain our friendships. And maybe we shouldn't be doing that as much.
Yeah,
you know, but it's hard because that's the way, you know. We're going to talk about Josh Lekic today. I know him from Instagram. I've never talked to him off of Instagram. I wouldn't even know how to text him. I don't think I've gotten his phone number yet. I really should, since he's getting deleted off stuff. But it's like,
yeah, exactly.
Even me, I'm still on there, and he's still on there, and that's how we've become friends. And I consider him a friend now. And so that's what you were experiencing, I think, with your friend, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it's just tough. Look at that ad.
Yeah, I know. It's huge. Well, listen, so let's bring up a couple of things. Let's start with Josh. Let's talk about Josh first. And let me go ahead and pull this up into here. Look at that. Hey, we got that figured out, didn't we, Paul?
We did it, man. Perfect. It's,
you know,
beautiful.
So if you're listening to us on the audio podcast only, you know, you're missing out on a few things, actually.
Yeah, we actually do need to do a little promo here. If you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or you're checking out our Rumble channel, really want to tell you, you really want to come over to our new live streaming home. We just started this Monday. It's cozy.tv/cancelproof. That's cozy.tv/cancelproof. It is the best, the newest, the most fully featured live streaming platform in existence, a free speech live streaming platform where very little chance we are going to get canceled or banned.
Well, that's what we're hoping.
That's what we're hoping.
We think we're aligned with people who share our same values when it comes to being deplatformed. Let's put it that way. But yeah, you know, you have engaged with Josh more than me. I haven't really. I just started listening to his podcast just recently. I don't really know how you got connected with him, but and we can talk about that a little bit. But what's interesting is, so he's got a Cozy channel. He hasn't streamed there yet.
Not yet. It's coming soon. It's coming soon.
Yeah, and he's been, you know, what I've noticed about Josh's podcast is he releases these partial free episodes and then has his like full content behind the paywall at Patreon. Well, that's where it was. And I think that Josh had somewhere in the neighborhood of about 700 plus members contributing $5 or more a month.
I heard he was at around 4,000 or something. That's what was said. So do the math on that.
Yeah.
And I was a $5 or $8 contributor. I think I was not the bottom tier because I wanted to see his video podcast. So I was an $8 contributor. And, you know, Patreon didn't send me an email that says, hey, this guy that you're following, he's banned now. So, you know, if this didn't make the news, I'd have no idea. And I'm not so up on my finances where I would immediately see, oh, where did that $8 go?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So, which is another thing. They don't even tell the viewer that wants to see the content that, oh, you know, you might want to look elsewhere. We deleted him.
No, they just
messed up.
They just got rid of it. And it happened. He went on the Alex Jones show, I believe. So he was here in the Austin area, went on the Alex Jones show. And I think it was within hours of being on the Alex Jones show that Patreon took him off. Now, it didn't just happen to him. It also happened to Sidney Watson, I think the same day, who is somebody who's on The Blaze. And she will do this podcast with Elijah Schaefer.
She's that co-host of his show, right?
Yeah. Yep. So both of them, Josh and Sydney, were both kicked off of Patreon.
Who is this guy on this? Is that the CEO of Patreon or something?
This
jerk with the beard.
Think
yeah.
So
yeah, that's not Josh.
That's not Josh.
No,
I don't know why it's showing him. So yeah.
Yeah. Keep this tweet up.
He set up a Gumroad. Which is also where Sam Hyde's at. Now, what's interesting is Gumroad is not super well-oriented towards multimedia content that I've seen. I've seen Sam Hyde stuff there, and I'm like, it's kind of janky. But that's the problem, is like the more established platforms, you know, they're getting rid of everybody. And
yeah.
I do want to say, I listened to a podcast the other day. This guy has a podcast called Liberty Lockdown, I believe. He's a more libertarian podcaster.
That may be the name of the podcast.
I think that's what
Liberty
it was.
Lockdown.
But he went into a whole episode where he talked about how what's that guy's name? Klaus Schwab, the Great Reset guy.
Klaus Schwab,
and Klaus Schwab, I guess, wrote this book that's something like it's about. It's about investment capital, and it's the ESG stuff, and which is like all about the diversity on boards at big corporations and all of that stuff, right? Anyway, I don't want to go on a rabbit trail. What I wanted to say is that there's this whole rabbit trail you can go down. I started to go down it. I intend on looking into this more, but it's that many of these big corporations are actually not responding to customer demand with any of this stuff.
Yeah, not at all.
They are actually being protective of investor capital. And when you become these publicly traded companies and everything, there's pressure being put on from all of these different places, BlackRock, all of these different VC funds, everything that's like, listen, you've got to be 100% on the Great Reset woke agenda or, you know, you're done.
Yeah, everybody's falling in line. We don't have the news article pulled up, but I think the SEC earlier this week, a couple days ago, announced, you know, all public companies are going to put in new rules where you got to talk about your climate agenda and how you're going to you know, affect it, and if there's going to be carbon offsets. And it's like, that's what's coming, you know. That is all part of the plan. I mean, I just think about when Sarbanes-Oxley went into effect in the 2000s, whatever, and just the regulatory nonsense that created. I was working at a small family-run business with like over 100 employees that became a public company during that time, and it was millions and millions of dollars that cost because of legislation that arguably really didn't help anybody. It was like the Enron thing was so bad, we can't ever let another Enron happen again. Well, listen, that's happened again. We just haven't heard about it. And so we're going to put, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley, there was a Republican and a Democrat. They put this legislation through, and the giant corporations of the world could weather a couple extra million dollars worth of hire a couple more lawyers and a couple more whatever. But like the company I was with was like, man, this is really cutting into the bottom line. And it was a media company. So it's going to be like that. But now it looks like it's the SEC, which can just say, you got to put these reports in now.
Yes.
Guys.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting to bring this all together, okay, is that, yes, on one hand, there is some power. We do have power as consumers where we put our money, where we spend our money. I think it's really, really important for us to think about this deeply and say, hey, what subscription to Disney Plus, Netflix, whatever it is that you may or may not have. I don't know who has what, or maybe some of y'all who are listening to this have already gotten rid of all those subscriptions and you are not paying any money to corporations that hate you if you can help it. But I think a lot of us could look a little deeper at this and say, wait a minute, we do have money we can redirect, and we can give our money and give our resources to creators and companies who support the ideas we support, who care about the things that we care about, who don't hate us, right? And at the same time, recognizing that there's other factors at play. There's this big pot of investor capital money, Wall Street, VC money, all of that. There's the SEC. You know, there's the fact that Apple and Google will not put certain apps on the App Store unless you bend the knee to the woke agenda. Like, all of this stuff's at play. And so it means that the consumer dollar and satisfying the marketplace isn't the only factor, and in fact, may not even be the most important factor. And there's one other thing I want to say about this, is that this does mean there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity for companies and creators and consumers to say, we are going to make a counter economy, a parallel economy. We are going to shift our dollars and attention, and we're going to build companies and products that exist outside of Wall Street, exist outside of, the SEC to the degree that we can, that exist outside of venture capital funds. And I think that's where things like Cozy come into place. I think it's where Gab comes into play. I think it's where also, it's not perfect. Rumble and Locals is not perfect by any stretch. I think they're a better alternative than some. I think Locals so far hasn't taken any action equivalent to what Patreon's done. Patreon's been doing this for a while. So, but again, there's a lot happening here right now in this domain. And I think with Josh, I think it's important for those of us, those people who are on the Cozy platform where we're currently live streaming, to, go ahead and sub into his channel, support him. He's definitely, somebody that's out there. He's not self-censoring and he's getting penalized for it. And then it's funny because you look at Sidney Watson, and The Blaze and Elijah Schaefer. And again, I liked a lot of the work that Elijah's done. And, I even like some of the work that Glenn Beck's done over the years. But they don't even strike me as particularly like offensive or aggressive or, that seems like that's even that's a strike closer to like, I don't want to say more normal content, but like content that's just not quite as fringe or on the edge or in your face as something like Josh's program, yeah. Something like our program.
And this is predictable. It's not about the edginess of the content, right? Just like it's not about supporting Ukraine is not about the American regime caring about refugees and people that might be under bombs, right? We don't care about that. It's about reach and influence and power. And so they went after Nick Fuentes hard because they saw that a guy like Nick Fuentes was able to go from maybe this little, like, he's in this corner, he streams on the internet, groypers are this small little curiosity that we can use our traditional tactics to beat down and write hit pieces and all that stuff. And then during Stop the Steal, Nick could mobilize thousands of people in cities far and wide, and they went, oh, shit, this guy actually has some power here. And it wasn't just Nick. Alex Jones was bringing people out. Ollie Alexander, Stop the Steal were bringing people out. The whole coalition was bringing people out. And so I think with Elijah Schaefer's show,
yeah.
I mean, the most aggressive thing, to use your words, that he did was he had Nick Fuentes on recently, which is like, I remember seeing that, and I'm like, ooh, he's streaming on YouTube. Nick Fuentes is on. That's dangerous. But he, it's just these companies going after the counter narrative points out there,
yeah.
And Elijah Schaefer counts as one. He's one of those guys, even though the content that he puts out there on his show, at least, doesn't rise to maybe even what we've done to get deplatformed with 100 followers off YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think something to recognize is that, you know, Ali Alexander during the Stop the Steal, movement, he used to always talk about bodies in the street. Bodies in the street, being able to, and this is live bodies in the street, guys. This is this is
not,
organizing.
Not create limp bodies in the street.
Yeah, exactly. We've got to be
let's
cautious
be very
about
clear.
This.
Yes. Don't want to get banned off Cozy.
Exactly, but it was always about the ability to get people to show up. Well, you start looking into what's going on. You know, listen. The establishment got scared on January 6th, something I firmly believe. They saw a million people who were really, really mad. And they're like, oh.
From the right. And that just doesn't happen. And they weren't all boomers. They weren't all MAGA boomers that were sitting on lawn chairs and driving motorized scooters.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, wow, the ability to mobilize people to show up, that's power. And what we've got is we've got people on the internet and influencers on the right who are able to do this. And they're like able to get people to go to any city in the country at a moment's notice in a large amount of people. So preventing people from being able to organize and communicate online, that's number one. They got to compromise the communication lines of the rebellion. Number two is to cut off the ability to support yourself, to be able to earn a living. And here's the thing. Right now, if you are part of any major corporation or company, like, you can get fired for being vocal in any way about political beliefs that are, anti-regime, just on your personal Facebook page. Yeah. And so if you don't want to self-censor and censor yourself on your own personal social media, you have to think about, okay, I either have to go into business for myself, I have to, like, work for a small company that's run by somebody who's pretty based. I don't know what other choices there are. I mean, you start to see, or you're going to be like, well, I'm going to go get a job at some corporation. I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to put my head down. I'm going to make my money. I'm going to get out of there. Well, that's what's dangerous. So it's like they close off the ability for you to be vocal and have your opinions and, like, you know, say what you believe and be able to earn a living the traditional way. And now if you're a creator who's earning money the non-traditional way by making content and going online, they want to be able to shut you down there. And they do that by shutting off the spigot at places like Patreon.
Yeah, exactly. And to your point about, you know, working a corporate job and being beholden to, you know, those masters via the paycheck, I know I can tell you absolutely. Even though I was a 100% freelancer 5 years ago, I had enough big clients that were attached to large mega corporations with names like Disney and Fox and NBC and the rest, where I wouldn't be doing this show. I know that. I mean, I wouldn't be here putting this message out in the way that I am. Probably wouldn't be doing the documentaries that we are doing. And so, you know, fortunately, I find myself at a little bit older age than our audience here, built enough where we can have that cushion to be able to go do the projects and the things that we believe in. But it's hard to do. It's very hard to do. And we realize, and you made this point on the Tom Woods podcast that you were on today and yesterday, a little plug, go to Tom Woods' podcast and listen to Jason Rink. Awesome two-part interview that he
did. Thank you. You are my hype man.
I'm a big hype man when I enter this house, when I enter this studio. But yeah, we realized like not everybody can do that. So you made a good point. You said, hey, if you can't do that and you have to self-censor, like, we get it. That's fine. But what you can do is you can give us money. Okay, guys? That's the pitch. Powerchat.live/cancelproof. Give us money.
That's right. Thank you. I'm glad you got to that.
Yeah, I had to just work that one in.
I did want to take a minute, though. I felt like this was a good opportunity. I didn't plan on sharing this, but, you know,
nice.
I'm going to share
exciting
my original almost cancellation, which was when I went on the Greta Van Susteren show.
Oh, this is, I love this.
All right. So
you guys don't even know this.
So I used to work in corporate America. I had spent 10 years in commercial banking. I was in equipment leasing at Chase Bank, and I had a great job, golden handcuffs, made a lot of money, had a ton of vacation, was dying inside. This was 2007, 2008, when I, is when I basically left that company. But what happened was I had gotten involved in Ron Paul's campaign while I was working there in corporate America, got really turned on to like things about like the Federal Reserve and how our money was messed up. And I became anti-war during that season. And so I was working at Chase Bank during the week. And then on the weekends, I was speaking at End the Fed rallies. And so
what a double life.
I did.
A
I was
double agent.
I was living a double life at the time. And so ended up having a political organization that I was leading in 2009, still working at the bank. And so we had this big event in Columbus, Ohio, is where it was, at the state capitol. Judge Napolitano, who's like a Fox News contributor guy, was there. Again, this was Tea Party, very much more establishment Republican those days. And I spoke at this event, and Judge Napolitano ended up getting me a spot on Greta Van Susteren, who Greta was, you know, I don't want to say she was as big as Tucker is now, you know, but like she had a pretty substantial show back then on Fox.
Yeah, it was a primetime show.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is my first appearance on Fox, and I go on Greta Van Susteren, and the producers talk to me before the show. You know, they sort of vet you before the show or ask me questions. And the one producer's like, hey, so where do you work? And I was like, well, listen, I do all this political organizing just on the side. It's not in my capacity. And he's like, oh, yeah, no problem. I'm like, you know, I wouldn't want this to come up in the interview. He's like, yeah, no problem. I said, well, I work in, you know, commercial banking. I work at Chase Bank. He's like, all right, fine. No problem. I get on the show live on Fox. I think it's like the second or third question out to shoot. You can find this on YouTube, by the way. Type in Jason Rink, Greta Van Susteren.
Well,
see
I think
the
we're going to play this after this story.
Oh,
this,
no.
I think we have to.
And so the second or third.
Greta in chat, if you guys want to watch it on the show.
Exactly.
Live.
Yeah. It's
we'll do the work.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm regretting bringing this up.
No, man. I have to put my foot down. I am a 50% owner of this channel. And I'm pushing hard for it. Okay,
right.
Continue, please, continue.
Well, the point is, second or third question, Greta says, do you have a job, sir? That's exactly how it's do you have a job, sir? And I tried to pivot. I was like, well, yeah, but, you know, that's that thing I do doesn't have anything to do with me being a political radical.
What a cuck.
You know,
that's,
I did.
That's such a cuck move.
I love
it, though. She threw you off your game.
I went under the bus, and I think I recovered by the end of the interview.
It was good. I watched it a lot.
We'll see. But what happened was the next day I go into Chase Bank, and they seized my laptop, and then a message went out to the entire business banking department talking about doing unauthorized media appearances, that's, you know, you're in violation of your contract. And so, you know, that was the first time I ran up against this idea that, like, hey, I'm really not free to go out there and do all the stuff I want to do, and I can either stay at this job at the bank, make great money, retire, you know, be a part of the establishment and a servant of the Federal Reserve, or
a faithful servant of Her Majesty the Fed.
I was. And, you know, I decided to leave a couple months later, moved to Austin, Texas, and the rest is history. Made my first film shortly after that. But
nice. They were excited about your origin story in chat, I got to tell you.
Oh,
so
great.
So it's good. I'm not going to make you play it, Jason. I can sense the discomfort. I don't want an awkward conversation with you later.
I think we'll play it. I think we play it like on our way out of the show.
That's a nice idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll take a break there and then come back to wrap up live.
Yes,
I like that.
Exactly.
I like that. So maybe you guys will get it if you stick around.
So, yeah, but the point is like, even that was 2009, guys. Even that back then, you know, it's like you couldn't be doing these things on one hand and maintain your corporate status. It's like 100 times worse now. I couldn't even imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah, you would have not just gotten an email sent out and a slap on the wrist. I mean, these days, well, number one, you probably would have been hip to the fact that you just are not allowed to do those interviews, number one. But if you did that, it would just be like, boom, your job's over. Your key doesn't work. You can't get in the building. You're probably, it's like, bring back the company-issued cell phone immediately. And so it's just so much worse.
Yep.
You know, we were talking about my origin in Hollywood and how I can't even imagine how much worse it is now, 20 years later.
It's, oh, yeah.
It's everywhere. All these corporations. If you work for a large corporation, you're like, you're supporting the regime, all the bad stuff that's going on in our world, you know, all the, all of it. Yeah. You know, all of it, really, for the most part. Because the corporations are, and the BlackRocks of the world, and those that fund, you know, are, you know, that's what they're pushing, and that's what they're a part of. And so it can make you feel a little like, wow, what the hell am I going to do? Like, we're not saying don't take a job,
right?
That's not what we're saying, but there are steps you could take, and I think you outlined those earlier, is with where you put your support and who you try to boost up.
Yeah, and for me, this is actually also about what the cancel-proof philosophy is. Like, cancel-proof philosophy is about how do you have a cancel-proof life? How do you have cancel-proof wealth? How do you have a cancel-proof platform, right? Like, how do you move through the world in a way where you can say, you know, I can say what I want and do what I want. I've got, you know, my own sources of revenue that nobody can take away from me. And that, listen, I know this is a big ask. I'm not saying this is easy. Guys, I mean, this has taken me a long time to get there, and I'm not even totally there. I don't want to say I'm totally cancel-proof yet. It's like, but I want to be. I want to be in a place where I can say and do what I want, and my revenue and my livelihood can't be taken away from me. My voice can't be taken away from me. That basically they would have to throw me in jail or kill me for me to stop doing what I'm going to do. And so, you know, I just look at that, and I think it's something we should all strive for. And I took my first steps towards that back in 2009 is the bottom line. So the other thing I wanted to jump into or talk about was just I also wanted to talk about this Babylon Bee story. And the Babylon Bee story, we're not going to spend a ton of time on it, but I do think it's interesting because it speaks to this question of the role of satire and how satire, and this isn't just satire, by the way, okay? You know, yes, the Babylon Bee is satire, but they're, you know, specifically calling out this whole gender issue that is really significant for us to discuss as a society right now. Like, there's real world ramifications about this. You know, people are acting like the science is settled, right? Like, around this whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, even to the point that in the Supreme Court hearings that were going on the last couple of days, you know, the woman who's being vetted for that, what's her name? Judge Jackson? Is that correct?
Let's go with that.
Okay.
See how I did that? No, sound like I don't know the answer, her whole name.
I could be totally wrong on that.
I've seen it. I've seen it, right?
Yeah, she was asked point blank, can you define woman? And yeah. she couldn't and wouldn't.
She chose not to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, I saw somebody on Twitter that said, what power is compelling her to answer it this way?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's a good question. There is a power. There's a force that has got people bound up right now to know that they have to thread this whole needle of like gender and pronouns and everything. And she knows she's been a faithful servant of the left probably her whole life. And she knows that it could all end in a moment if she says something incorrect.
That's right.
That gets her, like, you know, canceled by her own team, right? And so now we got the Babylon Bee, and I think they had an article where they said, you know, Rachel Levine, who's like the part of the Health and Human Services of the United States, is like a trans, so a man who's now a woman, and
a trans woman.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how you say this. See, I'm misgendering right now.
I know this now. Start with a man, become a woman. You're a trans woman.
Okay, gotcha.
You were right.
Okay, great. They said, you know, Man of the Year award.
Yeah, that's the joke. That's the joke, right?
Man of the Year award.
It's like Lila Thomas, I think, is the name of the transgender swimmer, was a man last year, high testosterone levels, dominates women swimming, you know, so the top women swimmer in these different distances is a man, and we know that's a man because biologically male, born a man, made in the image and likeness of God, there's man and woman, we know all this is not controversial.
Right.
he's a man. He can demand you call him a woman or refer to him as she, and I can demand that that's fucking dumb, and I will. So now, you know what? Now we can't put this on Spotify. I just...
Well, you might have to edit
it. I'm okay with. But, and so I think that's the joke, right? It's like, okay, a man wins women swimming. A man is...
Wait, hold on.
In this other position as a woman. Yes.
Are you saying we can't put it on Spotify because you cursed or because we're talking about this issue?
I think you know the answer to that, Jason.
Well, because
we can curse on Spotify. All right. Come on.
Well, what I'm saying is, listen, at this point in our world, the more platforms we get kicked off of, the higher our clout is, really.
Well, you know, to that point, I was actually, while I was streaming a Nintendo Switch game last night, I thought to myself, I really should put a Twitch account out and just stream there at the same time just to get banned from Twitch. So at least I could say I did.
Exactly.
Because I've never really used Twitch, so I don't have an account. So I should at least get banned from Twitch so I can have that part of my story. Yeah. Anyway, that's the point.
We want to add as many stripes, as many patches to our uniform as possible of all of the battles that we've endured. So, but yes, this whole thing is pretty ridiculous. And I think what we're getting at is, you know, again, so we've got somebody like Josh who's been, you know, canceled from Patreon, impacted his living, his livelihood. He's not a huge podcast. He's not a huge, like, he's not like globally known, right? But he goes on the Alex Jones show and that does him in, basically. He gets kicked off.
Yeah, no coincidence. He's on American Journal in the morning.
Yep.
I did a post on Instagram. I said, Josh had actually, you know, reposted my story on Instagram right before, like, he went, or right after he got off, right before the, you know, and then his very next post was, guys, I just got banned. So I said, I was the last post that he made. My post was the last post that he made before he got banned. And so I take full responsibility for that. And I'm very sorry, wow. Josh. But I did text Josh when we started talking about him, and he said, thank you. Please give them my Gumroad. So I want to just say one more time, go support Josh Lekic, is how I think he pronounces his last name, at Gumroad. I don't have the URL, so I said, please make sure it's on your Cozy page, because I know that I could say cozy.tv/Josh. So go there, cozy.tv/Josh. You can watch his show on Cozy, which we want you to do, and then you could support his premium content, because he needs to, he feeds his family literally from Patreon, and now he doesn't have that source anymore. So that's going to be tough.
And he's a funny dude. His show's funny. I mean, he's funny. He's based. He's gonna be right at home here.
We're going to do that too, guys, just so you know. We obviously love Super Chats, and that's a way that you can help support us. But we're going to have a home somewhere, definitely not Patreon, where you can give us, you know, pitch in $5 a month or $8 a month or whatever and get the whole back catalog. And whatever we're going to do, ultimately the value proposition is like, hey, help us out. You know, if you want to support us, we're going to give you the option to support us. But we'll try to, you know, throw something in there too. And maybe we'll have a tier where once a year, if you come to Austin, we'll take you on a barbecue tour. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
That's cool, right? That's the kind of thing we should do.
We should look into this, you know, and not commit to it fully, but
Like how on show one you said we're gonna stream all week, I am saying there
barbecue
will be
tour.
A barbecue tour tier.
Hold on.
Oh, I guess we need to ask the question.
We need to ask the question to President Predicto.
Should we do the tour?
Forget that. Forget all of that.
He said no.
Man. Dude.
Forget that. Forget
dude,
all of
that.
That's,
I don't know.
I feel completely rejected right
that's
now.
That's weird. That's weird. Because I actually was kind of on board. I was like, okay, we'll do the barbecue tour.
It was a good
tour.
Idea. It's Donald Trump.
Hey, listen. Let's table this discussion. Maybe we have to produce a little bit more detail. Maybe it's just that we have to actually choose the barbecue joint.
Like, well, I said tour.
Yeah,
right?
Well, maybe,
so
maybe that's
little,
the problem. I don't maybe, know. We got to get to the bottom of this. But so put it on hold. You know, President Predicto, at this point, we do put a lot of credit and credence in that. So I did want to say one other thing.
Yeah.
And we're getting towards the end of this,
Babylon
wrapping
B.
this episode.
We're still at Babylon B, right?
We are, yeah. But I did want to say, you know, I wanted to pivot away to another cancellation. I do believe what Destiny also got.
Yeah. So we don't know the full story. It appears that Destiny was banned off of Twitch today. I was trying to do a little bit of research on this before we came on the air. Some people think
Who is Destiny?
Oh, like, I'll tell you. Yeah. Okay, so cool. Destiny is a streamer, a pretty big Twitch streamer. He's he's a liberal, but he argues with a lot of people. I don't really fully know. It's not like I watched him, but he's kind of on the left. And he did a debate recently with Nick Fuentes about the war in Ukraine. He took the Ukrainian sort of the standard position that's out there, and Nick took the Russian position. But he's respected by Nick, and he's respected, I think, by the cozy audience because he doesn't call Nick just a stupid racist white nationalist. He actually engages with the issue. He brings an argument forth, albeit in that case, I think not the right position forth. And they have some mutual respect for each other, the audiences. And I think a lot of the cozy audience, we're broadcasting, of course, on cozy.tv. They would love to see a guy like Destiny come on over. And if you read Nick's Telegram chats over the last couple months or his Telegram post, he'll say things like, I'm really starting to like what Destiny says about this or that. Or so I think there's been this appreciation from Nick on trying to kind of, you know, bring him over to our side. And just like you were radicalized in a way when you got banned, maybe this is the ban that Destiny needed to get radicalized and come on board with America First.
Yeah, definitely could be. And
so what I was going to say is we don't know if that's a permanent ban. At least when I last checked, some are thinking it might end up being like a 24-hour ban. And then there's a question of was he banned because he had Nick Fuentes on.
Sure.
And apparently he only streamed the debate with Nick for like five minutes, a really short period of time before he stopped the Switch stream, the Twitch stream, and kept it on YouTube. Some people are thinking that's why. Obviously, Nick is banned, and he had a banned person on his channel. Or I guess he went off last night and said some things. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's something totally different. Maybe, who knows? We don't know. But it's no surprise, really, that you start seeing, you know, if what I said was true, and it's the influence, and it's the reach, and it's the person that these companies don't like, what better way to send a message than, you had Nick Fuentes on your show for 5 minutes. We don't care that you're popular. We don't care that you make a lot of money here. We don't care that a lot of people follow you. You're gone. And to that point, I wanted to mention what the host of American Journal on InfoWars said when he had Josh Lekich on. He had Josh on yesterday in studio. Josh gets banned after that appearance, banned off of Patreon. He has him on again today. And Harrison, I believe, is his name. He says, you know, it wasn't just an attack on you, Josh. It was an attack on InfoWars because they're messaging to us very clearly, if you dare have somebody, you know, that is making money or that is on our platforms, they run the risk of being deplatformed after they appear on your show. And, you know, a normal person would be like, I don't want to invite this guest on, and then they lose their source of income. Like, he felt bad about that. And so,
yeah, that's a good point.
The chilling effect of deplatforming people really ripples out, right? And so if Twitch ends up saying to Destiny, you're gone, the reason you're gone is you dared talk to Nick Fuentes, well, you know, that's going to have an effect much larger than just this one guy on Twitch and Nick over here. So, Destiny, if you're listening, come to Cozy. We would love to have you on Cozy. I mean, listen, I don't make the rules. I think Nick would probably say, let's give this guy a shot. I was watching Michael Alberto's channel, and Michael Alberto on Twitter posted a clip of him and Destiny talking on some sort of game stream, and he said, you should come. You'd be the first libtard to be on cozy.tv.
Hey,
so yeah,
you know what? That would be interesting. You know, it's like this is a channel in development right now. You know, we'll see what the future holds. I'm glad we got in when we got in. You know,
yeah,
glad we'd be able to get in here and be somebody a part of it?
Somebody in chat had asked, like, what did you get paid to do the Nick documentary? And what I guess we'll say is we got paid no money. We did it at our own expense. It was a fairly low budget production, and hopefully it looks nice. But we got, in a way, we built up some goodwill. We got into this community. We got into AFPAC. We met a lot of people. Now we have a channel here. We wouldn't have had this channel here.
That's
we wouldn't
absolutely
have
right.
been building this audience. We wouldn't be talking to you guys. We wouldn't have all these friends if we didn't say, you know, hey, I want to tell the story. I want to pitch it to Nick.
Yep.
I'm going to buy a plane ticket to Chicago. I'm going to get a hotel room for a couple days, and I'm going to clear my schedule for a couple weeks, and I'm going to make this piece of content. So no regrets on doing that. Yeah. I think that was a great opportunity. And so did doing that close some potential doors for us? I'm sure it has. And we'll probably never know what doors it closed, right? It wasn't like a client said, oh, you did a Nick Fuentes documentary. Yeah. We're done with you. That's not how it works. But you know what? If you believe in something, you do it, right? And that's what we did.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, just a little bit, you know, this is a show by filmmakers. Talk about the business a little bit. You know, I mean, if we actually were going to make a project like this for a client or for, you know, somebody who was paying us to do it, right, it'd be tens of thousands of dollars to make a mini doc series like this. We've got a lot of time and effort and thought and, you know, some expense in it, and that's the way we do some projects that we really love the topic and we want to try to see something get produced. And so I'm with you, Paul. Like, I think we've got a lot of goodwill, and we've we've gotten paid, compensated in other ways. That a lot of times that's what it is in this business. You know, when we went out to do the steel. You know, we did that at our own expense, you know, partially because we wanted to own all the footage. We wanted to have the IP. Same thing with Q Sent Me. But again, that's also part of our business model here is that, you know, we've got commercial production work we do that helps fund the passion projects. And we don't punch the clock for anybody. Everybody who works with us is based. They're on, you know, they're like-minded. We all like the same things and are going for the same things. And that's one of the nice things about having your own business, working for yourself. And I recommend it to anybody who's thinking about becoming an entrepreneur. Even though the government throws up all sorts of obstacles in your way, it's still been the best way to be, in my opinion.
Yeah, so. And this is a good way to be too. If you get into the creative world or whether it's filmmaking or you do graphic design or you do whatever it is, art, painting, whatever, sculpting. I don't know why I went there, but I learned this from my buddy, the guy. I won't dox him because he's really not on our side, but he's a good friend, childhood friend. It kind of got me my start in the business, and he always did this thing where the ratio is a little bit off, but he would do one job for a client and then one job for himself. And then, you know, it ended up being, you know, five jobs for clients and one job for himself. So he's a working, you know, Hollywood commercial director, a lot of big clients. You'll see his ads like during the Super Bowl and stuff like that. But he always makes sure to take time. He tries like once a year to do a project. Usually it's not funded, it's low budget, it's just him and a camera following something. And that's like his me time, you know? And so for us, we ended up with these really big projects that we're still working through, but I think you can do both. You know, make your money, support your family, build some wealth, put some money away, protect yourself so that you could do the me time projects and maybe put a little bit of money into them if they call for it. So yeah, that was a good tip that I learned from him, and I think we're kind of living that out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, I think we're wrapping up here. I mean, we could go on talking about there's other people that. You know, Twitter froze accounts that shared stuff or commented on the Babylon Bee thing. Like, it's like a snowball, you know. And I think one thing that's interesting is that, just to put a bow on this whole topic for the night, is that big tech has created a problem for themselves because there is no real standard. They're not really adhering to any consistent set of principles. And so, which, you know, what's new, right? But like,
yeah, it's almost by design. Nobody knows why they get banned.
Yeah.
right? No, yep. Nobody really ever knows. And the emails are vague, and it's you've violated this or that, or it was hate conduct, or it was promoting violence, or it was, you know, this technicality or copyright. And it's like, ultimately, these things are written in such a way where they can just say, oh, I don't like that guy. Wait, you know, the temperature of the room, is there going to be any blowback? Well, nowadays, no. Boom, banned.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, and even earlier, I think earlier this week, Kyle Kulinski, he's a guy on the left, you know, he's a political commentator. He shared some, like, image from the movie Scanners, like, from the 70s of a dude's head exploding. And, like, that got him struck on Twitter, right?
What?
And it's like, so it's even, and I'm not saying that Kyle necessarily was a guy who was really supportive of censorship. I think he's, you know, got some of the better consistency of people who are on the left. But this idea is that even people on the left and, you know, people who thought maybe they were going to be safe from, it's like Donald Trump gets banned, that's fine. Get Trump off of there. Some of these people who thought they were safe, they're realizing, wait a minute, this broad power that's not consistent, it's going to be a problem, not just for the people on the right that we don't like, you know, it's going to be a problem for us. And it's like, listen, the regime comes for us all. And we've got to be ready and prepared. And we've got to have ourselves positioned so that if they take down one of our channels, one of our sources of revenue, we're like a hydra. Oh, that's fine. You just cut off one of our heads. We still got six over here. And by the way, now we just multiplied this. And by the way, our audience is now going to double down and share us. And it's something that when we interviewed James O'Keefe at Freedom Fest this past year, he talked about this. He said, look, we got banned and our people just now are a distributed network that share all of our stuff. We're actually getting more reach. So I do think that that is a little bit of a silver lining, and I do see that's happening. And then places like Cozy.tv are popping up. Other services are popping up. Gumroad, you know, the if they got any sense, the guys over there are recognizing, look, we're becoming a safe haven for content creators who are being chased off of other platforms. You know, if they're smart, they're going to welcome these people with open arms, and we'll see. So, but yeah, man, that's what I got to say.
We're at the beginning of this parallel economy and these alternative services really taking hold. When I look at, I mean, I really see Cozy as this really important thing that's out there now because, you know, Cozy is like the Twitch alternative, right? And Cozy right now is pretty insulated for the most part. I know somebody asked Nick, a super chat, I think, was like, can Cozy be taken down? Is there any worry? And he was like, well, yeah. I mean, he's like, I don't think it will, but there's things companies can do to really make it hard for us. They still, you know, they built it themselves, but I'm sure there's still some underlying architecture that they have to rely on the goodwill of some people. And probably eventually you want to even move off of those. But, you know, we have a live streaming alternative that I bet you will be a refuge for people like Josh, who, you know, he's not on Patreon anymore, and maybe his other accounts are now compromised. Well, Cozy's safe. He's safe on Cozy. But we need that all across the board. We need the stuff that over at Gab, which we love, and Andrew Torba, who we know and who appreciates our work, and we love his work. That parallel economy that he talks about, whether it's in the banking, alternative banking, or financial services, the YouTube alternative, there's kind of a lot of YouTube-y alternatives. So we got the Twitch alternative on Cozy, the YouTube alternative, the payment processing, all that stuff. There's such a demand for it. There's a market for it. And that's going to be what we need to look out for. We need to start supporting those things and putting our money in those places, putting our accounts there.
Well, and I'll share this. I know that Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire are not necessarily the favorite commenters and channel of some of the Cozy audience. Let me just put it that way. But and even you, Paul, you know, and me.
Yeah.
Listen, I used to subscribe to the Daily Wire. I'm going to out myself. I don't anymore. But what I will say is that, you know, this week also, Harry's Razors, they were like pressured by a dude. There was a dude with 24 Twitter followers who got Harry's to basically do that. Like, he started it.
Okay. That sounds like the Joe Kent thing, you know?
It was
there was a tweet with, like, 3 retweets or 3 likes and a retweet, and that's what got Joe Kent to disavow Nick weeks after AFPAC or a week after AFPAC.
Yeah, I saw this dude's Twitter account, and, like, now in his bio it says, kind of known for canceling, you know, the Michael Knowles or whatever, or getting Harry's, to, like, And I'm like, dude,
claim to fame.
Awesome.
Yeah,
it's like, for clout. That's great. And it's like, but what happened in this situation is, you know, Jeremy Boring and the Daily Wire, they basically launched a commercial and a razor company pre-launch, you know, on the websites, I Hate Harry's or something like that. And the videos there, the videos are pretty great. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, it's one of the first videos, commercials I've seen or a response where a company that, you know, Harry said, we're not going to sponsor you guys anymore. And they're like, fine. What we're going to do is we're going to create our own razor company and market it to our huge audience, and we're going to specifically call out woke corporations that hate us, you know, in the advertisement. So it's really kind of crazy.
Yeah, I like to see that, and I would just say I'm in the let's be careful, guys, about that sort of marketing pitch that's clearly the advertising copy and the whole look of it is geared towards you. You know, hey, guys, we're with you. We don't like the woke guys. Number one, it's coming from Daily Wire. So it's a red flag already. But okay, it shouldn't, the source is not the paramount thing. It's also what's the message and what are they actually doing. So there's a little bit of a red flag there. Daily Wire is like a $100 million company.
Oh, 100%. By the way, you got to have capital to pull this stuff off. Yeah.
So that's me. I'm a little suspicious, but also conservatives, traditionally, we can be so stupid in how quickly we are to, like, take any little breadcrumb of, that guy said something I agree with, and they're, like, our new hero. Right. And it happens all the time. It happened with, was it like Nicki Minaj last year because she didn't take the vax, and all these simps on the right were like, oh, Nicki, we love Nicki Minaj,
like,
because
let's invite
she stood
her to
up.
Speak at CPAC.
And it's like, guys, she hates you. She hates you. Her not taking the vax to go to the awards show has nothing to do with agreeing your moral values, your principle. You see it all the time with Bill Maher. Bill Maher has a viral 2-minute clip where he says something that sounds aligned with, like, a right-wing talking point. Yep. And people are like, he's seeing the light, Bill Maher. He's on our side. Come to the light. It's like, guys, he's a liberal that hates you. You're just seeing that sometimes they get something right that aligns with you. And so I just, you know, look at the Black Rifle Coffee. That split a lot of people. But I think they showed their true colors. They were like, we're patriots and we're men and we respect, you know, we want to get you. We want your dollar. And people gave them their dollars. And then they threw Kyle Rittenhouse under the bus. And it's like that stuff happens all the time. It's almost a strategy, if you will. And so when I see the razor thing, I'm like, okay, the messaging is fine. That's cool, but that is Jeremy Boring, and that is Ben Shapiro, and that is Daily Wire. So I will kind of be like, let's just see what happens. But I like that that's happening now. You know, I like that is happening.
That's
now.
That's the point. You know, you didn't go pre-order your Jeremy's razors. I understand.
Yeah. Well, I'm not much of a shaver.
That is true, clearly, but the fact of the matter is, I think too, the larger point is that I think this is the first of many that we're going to see where it, and again, it's an acknowledgement that there's an underserved market and audience who's starting to wake up to the fact that they're like, listen, I'd rather give my money to people that don't hate me. They don't have to love me. They just have to not hate me. They have to just not be actively working to undermine Western civilization and cultural norms that me as a sane person embrace. And, you know, that it's weird because it's like, you know, we're coming full circle on this, but it's like, you know, the Babylon Bee making a satirical comment, which is really, when you look at it, it's not even really a satirical comment. It's like it's an observation of biology.
Well, the world has become satire. So Babylon Bee's position in the world is to kind of just call out the craziness in a way, because the world is crazy. The world's satire. Yeah. I wanted to say that, in chat, my name is Paul. This is Jason. Somebody said the guy with the glasses is based. So I'm good.
We're both wearing glasses. So,
I was only talking about Bill Maher and Nicki Minaj. So thank you guys. Right. Yeah, he's based too. So
yeah,
Paul.
Actually, let me just be the one to say this. Paul is actually more based than me. Like he's just because he's been based longer. That's what I'm saying. Like
I got radicalized earlier.
Yeah,
I think is what it is. But just like you know, I'm a Catholic, and I know like I'm a cradle Catholic, and then the converts will come over, and they'll like quickly surpass you in their faith and their love of Christ and their devotion, and you're like wow, that just like you just were interested 6 months ago, and now you're like doing more devotions than me. And it's probably going to be like that. Your basedness is going to quickly surpass me, and I'm going to be looking at you. And I'm going to be full of inspiration. Yeah. So that will happen.
The next AFPAC, people who are listening to this will be like, man, I remember when Paul was more based than Jason. And now Jason's way more based than Paul, clearly.
Paul is kind of like, we don't even like him on the show anymore. When is Jason going to replace Paul? It's just not working. It's just not working anymore.
I'm looking forward to those days. No, this is a blast. We're having such a good time. We're really like that you guys are enjoying what we're up to. I think we're going to sign off this episode of the Cancel Proof Podcast. Be sure to check us out at iTunes and Spotify, which could be shut down at any time. But follow
depending
us.
On our edits.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But we are at Cozy TV streaming more frequently. And you can also check us out on Rumble, where we post the full video episodes of this. This has been Jason Rink and Paul Escandone. And we thank you for joining us again this week.
See you guys next time.